It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, boys and girls? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best of golf and golf lifestyle. This show, like every show, is a humdinger. I was just in Ireland yet again, and it was magnificent yet again. The courses, the people, the food, the nightlife, every bit of it was absolutely brilliant. And joining me today to talk about that is a person who's been very integral in the rise of Ireland in the golfing world. Ireland has become the destination in golf, and Alison Metcalf from Tourism Ireland is here to help me describe and to really tell you how they have done that, how they have gone from just a destination to the destination, I would say, in golf. It's going to be really interesting to hear what she has to say about what's in the game and how you can get there. So don't miss that. Also joining me is Josh Siegel from Golf District. This is more on the technical side of the game. You don't really see what's going on with them, but these are guys who make the game available to you. They work with golf courses to make tee times available. And there's a lot of people who are out there, and believe me, I know this, who are saying that they are making golf tee times available to you when they were really making golf tee times available for themselves, make them possibly available to you for more money. And if they don't, that tee time just disappears. It's a situation that needs to change, quite honestly. And Golf District and Josh Siegel are doing everything that they can to make that situation turn upside down, turn from a loser for the golfer to a real winner for the golfer. I'm really interested in what they have to say, and I think you will be too. it's been a little bit since we've been on the air, and it's been a great summer. It's been awesome. I haven't played that much golf, to be honest. There has been a period of just doing lots of things, working with the industry, getting involved more at a level where I can help to change the game rather than just talking about it, but actually doing something with the game. I'm very proud to announce that I've been named to the board of Audubon International, which is perhaps the best known group that functions as a guardian of golf, golf's environment, helping to make sure that the flora and fauna and species that are all there at golf courses are, that their environments are maintained and actually burgeon, that they have sanctuaries for bees, for birds. They just really do it all. And I couldn't be more pleased and more proud to be a member of this organization. I helped the golf courses in D.C. become members of Audubon International when I was there working on their management team. And to be named to the board is something that's very, very special to me. And I promise I will do my level best to help this organization do what it's doing now and doing so well now, and also to grow the organization into more areas to help it have more impact at more courses. That's what ultimately all of us want to do. And I am just thrilled that they would choose me to help be a part of the team. So I look forward to grabbing an oar and getting to rowing on that one. I'm also just looking to do some more travel this year. We have the Ryder Cup coming up not in the not too distant future, and I plan to be there. It's at a course that I played a few years ago, and it's a funny story. I think I told it here before, but essentially, I was set up by Tourism New York to go play the golf course, play Bethpage Black. I'd never played it before. So I got there a bit early and got my name registered and everything. And when it was my tee time, it was like a decent tee time, like 10 o'clock or something like that. And, you hear the stories about Bethpage Black where people are staying in their cars overnight and, camping out and doing all these things just so they can get a chance to play on this championship track that was so wonderfully restored by the USGA and all those great people there. It really is a great story in and of itself, how Bethpage Black became Bethpage Black in our minds. Anyway, I was set to go out, and I went to the starter shack and said, "Hey, I'm here, Michael Williams. Where are the rest of the people in my tee time?" She goes, "Well, we don't have any for you. Don't you have three players?" And I told her that I was being set up by New York Tourism, and I thought that they would have other players arranged for me to play. And she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her, and saying, "You want me to just get three players who are waiting? Because still, with this Bethpage Black, people are waiting to play. I can just grab three other players and go out and play." She leans out of her little desk there, a little hut. She looks left, she looks right, and she goes to me, "Hon, just go play by yourself. Have a good day. Take some pictures. You know, just enjoy it." I'm like, "Are you sure? Are you sure you want me to do that?" "Yeah, go ahead. Just send me some pictures." She gives me a number and everything, and I go out to play Bethpage Black, literally by myself. By myself, okay? I'm playing, and I'm just in a state of shock. I'm floating a couple of inches off the ground, which doesn't really help my play for the first couple of holes, but I am playing Bethpage by myself. And I had my cameras and stuff, so I've taken pictures and doing all things and recording the round and that sort of thing. And it's funny because the first couple of holes, you aren't playing near anybody. But after that, after the third hole, I believe, you start seeing other players on the golf course. And as I go by, and everybody's in foursomes, of course, and here I am playing by myself in the middle of the day at Bethpage Black. And you can see other people pointing at me and literally read their lips going, "Is that Tiger?" People are going, "Is that Tiger? That's Tiger Woods. I can see him. That's him right there. That's him." And I was just stunned. It was such a wonderful day. And after the first couple of holes where I shook off the nerves and the rust, I actually had a really, really good round. And I played by myself until I got to the 16th hole. And I caught up with another group that was there that happened to be three. So I joined them and played the last two holes. I really played well there. I shot 79 at Bethpage Black from the tees. That wasn't from the championship tees, of course, but from the tees that were appropriate for me, which is one of my very best days. And I was really just so chuffed, so pleased to have been able to shoot that round in that place on that day. And I mention it because the best in the world are coming to play there for the Ryder Cup. Number one, I know the course is going to show up. I know the course is going to be all that it can be. And I hope that the crowd will be the best that it can be. I hope that the crowd is enthusiastic yet polite in every sense of the word. Enthusiastic because I know they're going to be in a New York state of mind. And they're going to be very, very excited about the U.S. playing, and that's all good. But I hope that there is a level of sportsmanship that I have held golf to. I hope that that level of sportsmanship comes into play when the participants there are watching and enjoying the best golfers in the world playing in the best competition in golf. Again, I hope to get up to Bethpage, not necessarily to play it before, but I will be there for the event, and I'll be reporting from that and give you a couple of interviews from that. So stay tuned, and I'll let you know. But yeah, that was quite a special day at Bethpage, and I still hear ringing in my ears. Is that Tiger? That's Tiger, isn't it? Yeah, not so much, but I felt like him that day. I sure did. So let's take a quick break. Go get yourself a beverage and a crunchy snack. We're going to have great guests. It's going to be a great show. You're a part of it. So sit back and enjoy. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Hey there, Jay Peterman here, John O'Gurley, and you are listening to Michael Williams and the 19th hole.
Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, as always, your host. I am very fortunate, and for a lot of reasons, but in particular, the amount of golf I get to play outside of the U.S. And I have seen some amazing courses in some amazing places, but I will go out on a limb and say that there is currently no better place to play, really, no better place to play in the world than Ireland. For, of course, the golf, but not only the golf. It's the people, it's the experience, it's the food, it's everything about it. I can't say enough about it, so I'm bringing on somebody to help me do that. Joining me today is the Executive Vice President of North America and Australia New Zealand for Tourism Ireland, the wonderful, the one, the only, Alison Metcalf. Alison, welcome back to the 19th hole. How are you, my dear?
I am fantastic. Just back from a trip to Ireland and a few days at the Open Championship. So always a pleasure to be your guest, Michael, and looking forward to our conversation.
Well, always a pleasure to have you. And the Open this year was in Northern Ireland, very well attended, very popular champion. What was it like to be there? Was it just as wonderful as it looked on television? Because I didn't get a chance to go.
It was incredible. I was there in 2019, but this time around in 2025, it was a much bigger event. There was an incredible atmosphere. And over the full week, I mean, they welcomed about 278,000 fans. So it is actually the largest sporting event ever held in Northern Ireland. And obviously the Open is the oldest major championship. So it was an incredible atmosphere. I think also the golfers loved the course, but I think the spectators loved it as well. It was really well set up. Lots of opportunities to view the course and view the players, either, you know, just walking the course, and a lot of great infrastructure brought in by the RNA. So lots of, you know, grandstands on many holes. So it was an incredible atmosphere. And it was great to see so many visitors, not only enjoying the Open, but just enjoying being in Northern Ireland and I'm sure spending time visiting and touring around the island of Ireland. So it was fantastic.
Well, I mean, it was fantastic as a fan to watch the tournament, to watch the course. And at some point, I haven't played that course either, so at some point I have to get out and play that one. But I have had the opportunity to play many other courses in Ireland. And I've got to say, as I said at the beginning of the show, it is, I think, the best golf experience in the world. And millions of people literally agree with me. What would you say, in your experience, mind, makes golf in Ireland so special to so many people?
Well, I think it's, you know, first of all, if you're passionate about golf, you want to go where some of the best golf courses are. And of course, Ireland is home to one third of the world's true links courses. So we've got the world class golf, and it's easily accessible. It's, you know, you can, you know, they're clustered around different regions. So the golf is great. But I think what's really, you know, important for people is it's great accommodation, the warmth of welcome, the things to do off the course. And it is that 19th hole experience. It is the complete package. So great golf, great scenery, a fantastic welcome, and great things to do and see. So that is the, I think, the Ireland offers the complete package, and I think that's what people love. And it's very easy to, you know, once you've played your golf, you know, there's an opportunities to go sightseeing, depending upon where golfing, but around the island. And because most Americans are playing links courses, they're on the coast, so there's some great, fantastic scenery, great food, great places to see. And, you know, as I say, you know, we love American travelers. We love North American travelers. We love international travelers all around the island of Ireland. So people are very keen to engage with you. So I think it is that 19th hole. It is the crack factor, the C-R-A-I-C, which means it's Gaelic for fun. I think people have a good time both on and off the golf course.
Roger that, because when I go, we definitely have a good time on the golf course and off the golf course. So let's break it down by numbers a little bit. I'll get back to my old marketing days. When we talk about what golf means in terms of revenue that comes into the country, that's something that you have those kind of numbers at your disposal. What golf actually means in terms of numbers and tourism and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, golf is, I mean, it's really important for Irish tourism, and because the average golfer spends about 3.5 times what the average leisure traveler does. Wow. So it's very much a premium segment of the market. The other great thing about golfers is that because they are golfing, they are getting off the beaten track. They're spending time and money in the region. So whether you're golfing, you know, up in Northern Ireland in the northwest, or in the west or the southwest, or in Dublin in the southeast, you're typically fairly well off the beaten track. So they're high spending visitors, and they're traveling, certainly from a North American perspective, they're traveling from sort of early April through until the end of October, early November. So it's a really important niche segment for us. I mean, it's certainly from a North American perspective, it's worth about, you know, 8 or 9% of our business, but it's really, really high spending. And we've seen a massive increase in interest in golfing in Ireland as a result of having hosted many, you know, large-scale golfing events over the last number of years. So the Open in 2019, I'm sure we'll talk about Ryder Cup coming back to Ireland in 2027. Mm-hmm. And if we just look back to, you know, to last week and to the 2025, the 153rd Open Championship at Royal Portrush, just the eyeballs, I mean, the broadcast coverage of that event globally was huge. And the coastline showcased all the way along that beautiful causeway coast where Royal Portrush is located, along with many other links courses, just looked stunning. So the legacy effect of these events is going to be huge. And I think what was interesting last week as well with the tournament, I mean, in terms of the broadcast coverage, not only was the coverage showing the golf course and the golfers and what was happening on the course, but there was a great opportunity for us to showcase many other attractions along that beautiful coastline. So everything from Old Bush Mills whiskey in the causeway, the Carrick Reed Rope Bridge, along to the walled city of Derry, lots of other opportunities and attractions were showcased, just giving people a sense of what's on offer. So golfers for us are very important, and as I say, they spend 3.5 times what the average leisure traveler does. So it's an increasingly important part of our business, as is sports tourism and the power of events like the Open, major sporting events, whether it's, you know, obviously golfing events or, you know, college football events, or we have the Steelers coming to play in Dublin, NFL games in September. Really, really important to us.
You're listening to the great Alison Metcalf, the Executive Vice President of North America, Australia, and New Zealand as well for Tourism Ireland here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, still your host and Sherpa, as long as they keep me up here. I would say that there are a lot more people playing golf than there were a few years ago, because we've known each other and I've made several trips to Ireland over the course of the years. But now, post-pandemic, we know that there's an explosion in the popularity of golf here in the United States, which means there's a lot of new players. Are you seeing more of those players, those new players, beginning to turn their eye towards the Emerald Isle and get, I guess, a picture or a plan to come to Ireland? Are they coming, or are they still wanting to come? Are you waiting for them to come?
No, I mean, they're still coming, and I think certainly we are, in terms of our own golf marketing. I mean, we want to try and broaden the appeal of Irish golf to, you know, a wider community. So what we have seen over the last number of years is an increase in couples coming to play golf in Ireland, women coming to play golf in Ireland, and the links courses are still the primary reason for coming. But also, depending upon the group, we've also got some incredible championship partner courses, whether it's the K Club, or whether it's, you know, for example, you know, so people are also willing to mix and match their courses. So we are definitely seeing an increase in demand for Ireland. And I think because we have, you know, some great places to stay. So, for example, I know certainly when the when couples are traveling, you know, sometimes the accommodation becomes a bigger consideration. We've got great castle hotels, beautiful 5-star properties, whether it's Ashford, Dromoland, the new Dunluce Lodge up in Portrush, lots of new accommodation options, spas, other health and wellness opportunities. So there's lots more to do and see. So depending upon the golfing group, sometimes people will play golf every day. Sometimes they will play every other day. So there's lots of options to satisfy sort of a whole variety of different golfing groups. But the main reason for them coming is their passion is golf. So yeah. The hardcore golfers, you know, I typically tend to say it's the guys that want to play 18, 36 holes. They will always be there, and they are there, and they continue to come. And increasingly, they're moving, you know, into the Northwest and experiencing some of the what we used to call lesser-known links courses, but becoming increasingly well-known courses, but fantastic golf in other parts of Ireland. And then, of course, we're also seeing, you know, the growth in couples and women's golf. So definitely Ireland is on their radar, and we're working with a lot of the, you know, the great U.S. golf tour operators who can put these packages together, and most of them are customized. So I always recommend to people, if you're planning a trip to Ireland, certainly consider using a golf tour operator. They can make your life very easy. They can create those bespoke experiences, get your tee times, your transportation, and make sure you have all the bookings and reservations that you need to have an incredible trip.
But you just sort of jumped to where I was going, because I was going to ask about who you go to. What's the best way to plan a trip when you say in your mind, I want to go to Ireland, what next? You know, where do you go? Do you go to the airlines, book a ticket? Do you go to travel agent? Do you go golf planning companies? Is there a website or someplace where we can go to start the whole planning process?
Yeah, I would suggest people go to ireland.com/golf, which is our Tourism Ireland website. So it will give you a lot of great information around, you know, the golf courses, suggested itineraries, and help you sort of figure out, you know, an initial plan. It will also then give you links out to specialist golf tour operators. So again, we don't book anything. We're impartial. We're giving you that information and give you suggested itineraries. But then you can link out to golf tour operators. So for example, if you really want to play some of those championship links, whether it's, you know, Royal County Down, Royal Port Rush, La Hinch, if you really want to get onto some of the high demand courses, the beauty of working with the golf tour operators, they will have, you know, blocks of tee times. So yeah, Definitely work with an operator. Start on ireland.com/golf. You can then go off to different golf tour operator websites. There are also two marketing organizations, Swing, which is Southwest Golf Ireland, and also the North and West Coast Links, and they can also help you put together itineraries. So ireland.com/golf is a good starting point, and it certainly makes it turnkey, because I think most golf trips tend to be customized. People have an idea on how much time they've got, what regions they want to go to, and the golf tour operator can also help you just plan from a logistics perspective, because sometimes people try to do too much, or they try to drive too far, and you miss out then. So you may play your 18 holes of golf, have lunch or a bite to eat in the clubhouse, and then you charge off and drive for 3 or 4 hours somewhere else. The beauty of golfing in Ireland is you can base yourself in a different region, as you know, Michael, from your experience, and you can go out each day and play a different golf course. So you don't have to be driving and moving on every day. So it's small things like that are actually really important to get right to ensure you have a really enjoyable trip.
I think you're right on all counts there. As a member of the media, when we go, we generally play a course, have some lunch, move on to the next course. But once you're there, if you're there on your own, you want to have some time to soak up all of the culture, all of the fun that's there in every single place. Yep. And it does take some time. So I would encourage people to leave yourself a couple of open days to not play golf and to really just jump in and experience some of the wonderful culture that's there, the wonderful music that's there, the wonderful food that's there. All that is Ireland, and you can still get in plenty of golf in that period of time. Allison, just one more time, would you say that name of that website where we can go to get more information and start planning our trip?
Yes, ireland.com/golf.
Beautiful. And I heard that you played some golf recently, which is quite unexpected. You usually don't have time to play, but you got a chance to play recently, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I took some time off. I was in Ireland, so I actually played at Royal Belfast Golf Club, which is claims to be the oldest golf course in Ireland. Dates back to 1881. So I got to play a bit of golf before heading up to spend a couple of days at the Open Championship. So that was nice, and the weather was fantastic. So I try and play a bit when I'm over. I try and take advantage of that, but often don't have the time to do that. But do love it when I get out there.
I love Royal Belfast. I shot a 78 there with a double bogey on the last hole. For some reason, I felt like I'd played that course all my life. and I would like to spend the rest of my life playing there. It is just an unbelievable place, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, an incredible score. And as you know, it's a lovely course. It runs along. All the fairways tend to slope towards the Belfast Lock.
Yes.
And you see the ferries coming across from Scotland into Belfast, again, just highlighting how close it is for people wanting to combine maybe Scotland and Northern Ireland. And they're also making some changes to that course. It was the first time I'd played. They've cleared a lot of trees and a lot of things out, putting a new third hole in and many other things. So I think it's very positive. As we're seeing a lot of investment in golf courses all around Ireland, including some new golf courses, which is not the norm. So probably worth just highlighting a couple. I know, Michael, we've talked about the Curraghcloe Links, which is opening in 2026 down in County Wexford. That's been designed by Dana Fry and Jason Stracker, and that will be a great addition to that swing through the southeast, and it overlooks that stunning beach which became famous in the Steven Spielberg movie Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. And another announcement that just came around the same time as the Open, just a couple of weeks ago, was an announcement from the Galgall Collection, who own a number of hotels and golf courses in Northern Ireland, looking to build a new links course up on the northwest coast, so between sort of Coleraine and Limavady, so beyond where Portrush is in a place called Ballerina. So that would be, if that gets the go ahead, they're looking at opening in 2029. It'll be one of the first links courses that's been developed up in that northwest, or certainly in Northern Ireland, for about 100 years. So great to have some new links products coming on stream, because that's obviously a big draw for North American golfers.
Well, God willing and the creek don't rise, I will get a chance to play those courses. And if I'm really fortunate, I'll get a chance to play with you, because you are one of the most knowledgeable and, if I may say so, charming people on the entire Ireland. Thank you so much for spending some time and telling us about Ireland. And good luck to you for the rest of the year. And we look forward to having you back when you have some more to tell us about.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. That is Alison Metcalf, the Executive Vice President. Just such a long title, North America and Australia and New Zealand. I don't know how she covers all that, but she is more than capable for Tourism Ireland. You can't say too much about Ireland. And it used to be that people would say, well, I'm going to take a bucket trip to go to Ireland. I'm going to take one trip and save all my money, save all my time, and I'm going to go there and see that. And they go and they see it. And as soon as the trip is over, maybe even before the trip is over, they're planning their next trip. They're planning their next visit. It isn't a bucket list type of place, because there's so many great things to do and great things to see there. You can't do it in one trip, literally, unless you're planning to spend a year there. So my advice is to pick one place and then go play another region, see the sights, see the land, get to know the people. It's a place, and it's becoming so easy to travel there now, and so affordable to travel there, that you can really do it. As it's like the 51st state. You can really get there that easily and that affordably. So if you haven't been, go. If you've been before, go back. You won't be sorry. You really won't. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. There's a lot of technology that's involved in the game. A lot of it goes on in your bag. A lot of technology that goes on in the golf ball and the golf club especially. But there's a lot of golf clubs, a lot of technology now that goes on in that whole thing before we get to the course, about getting people to the game, connecting up with tee times, all of those things. And it is, I would say that it's nascent, but it's prepared to take a real boom, a real step forward. And one of our next guests is a leader and getting the technology to that place. He is the CEO of Golf District. Please welcome Josh Siegel to the 19th hole. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me, Michael, and thanks for the introduction.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And, I really appreciate all the technology that's going on to help more people get involved with the game. We have so many people now who want to get on the courses but have particular needs in terms of their time. You have a lot of more people who are working from home, which means they're more available. But you have this whole thing about the technology for how you make a tee time, how you get access to a tee time, stuck in the early 20th century. So I love the fact that you guys are doing something about that. So without further ado, tell me about the company. Tell me about Golf District, how old it is, what it is, and how you came up with the idea.
Yes, so Golf District is a few years old, although we've only been in market for, we just passed the year anniversary this past July.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It's, as an entrepreneur, it's a long, long journey, and it's really amazing to see how far we've obviously come. I'm hesitant in calling it this, but we are the world's first, basically, StubHub, but built for courses with integrity for golf tee times. So when we started the company, it was myself and a couple others. It was basically on a beer napkin when we started, and we had this crazy idea that we had a solution to the access issues in public golf. And if you rewind a few years ago, we're talking about sort of COVID, the COVID environment. Actually, at the time, people were just getting outside, but we saw this theme that the golf course was extremely busy. High demand courses were selling out, but even with those sellouts, there were a lot of issues underlying that we were seeing. We couldn't get a tee time, but also inventory was being released on the market basically the last minute through the cancellation policies. And at that point, no one can get access. So we thought, how is golf running in 2022 or 2023 when we started? But what tools can we introduce, bringing them beyond where they were at the moment with basically 2010 tools? What tools can we bring through outside verticals, when we're looking at event spaces and sports and ticketing? Can we take something that has already been proven and apply it to our sport? And obviously we have, and we're doing that, and it works.
Well, you have two basic groups to please. You have obviously the players who are trying to book tee times, but you also have the owners who have access to all these tee times and want to make themselves more available to the public. How does the system work, and how do you go about pleasing both of these groups at the same time? Because it seems that with other solutions that are like yours, one side or the other tends to have complaints.
We're free. We actually, what's different about us than StubHub, and I didn't say this, is we write a check to the golf course, not the other way around.
So how do you make your revenue?
So we don't have a monthly or annual fee. We charge a small $3 on the round to cover our cost. All revenue we make in the secondary market, which are think StubHub, like 25, let's say we charge 25% for the fees between the buyer and seller. We split that 50-50 with the golf course. So we provided an accretive revenue stream that never existed before.
Okay, that's huge. No, it's huge, because you're getting into something in a way that most people haven't really thought about it. They really haven't thought about how to do that. So that's just enormous. That's a huge plus for you.
Yes. I mean, it's, some golf insiders called it a mouse trap. Like, we're the only ones to literally rip them checks. We'd like to get in a situation where we're literally writing them $50,000 just to go live.
Yeah. Like
that, I mean, there is a real revenue opportunity here in the industry that just has not been realized. That, you know, if it's good enough for the biggest sports brands outside of golf, why isn't it good enough for us? And so that's basically, there's a playbook that we're transparently running, Michael, that's no different than what we see outside of golf. We just tailor that in a way that benefits the golf course owner. The way that we built this product, it's not a third-party application. It is for the golf course. So we help the golf course eliminate no-shows, eliminate rain checks, totally stop tee shoot abuse in its tracks. So think third-party bots that are booking times on the course's website, and if they can't sell it, it gets dropped on, and then nobody wins.
Right.
So the product at its core is built for the golf course. We use their existing tee sheet. We're an integration partner for the majority of the tee sheet market in the U.S. So there's no change management when they want to use Golf District. One way of thinking of it is like your tee sheet is the iPhone. It's golf, as archaic as the reputation may seem. The tee sheet industry has actually done an excellent job creating that backbone infrastructure for a lot of other competency type products to come in and focus on some areas that is sort of on the peripheral of what the tee sheet does for the course. So we serve the golf course. They use and control Golf District basically through their tee sheet. They're pricing the inventory. But through this, through us serving the golf course, we are shifting the risk of the purchase, the tee time, from the golf course to the consumer. And that may sound like that's terrible. The consumer now has to prepay and it's non-refundable. But what we've done by shifting that risk is the golf courses get the confidence and the comfort to release inventory much further out than they ordinarily would have done. So what I mean by that is the golf course traditionally releases inventory, if you go on most public golf courses in the U.S., 7 to 14 days. Through Golf District, every single partner of ours has been releasing their inventory at least 60 days in advance. So who really wins here? It's everybody, because the consumer now gets access to inventory that they didn't have before. And because we've shifted that risk, the person, the golfer who booked that tee time, prepaid, non-refundable, when they know they can't make it, they're putting it back on the books as soon as possible, right? Because they're responsible.
Right.
So in turn, what that does is creates more opportunity for access for somebody else.
That's very interesting that you say that, and you admit it quite freely that the onus is now on the golfer to show up for something that he's promised to show up for. And I'll just say, as a consumer, from the consumer side, what if I can't show up, but I want to show up another time? Is there a way to change the tee time, or do you just basically, if you set it for that time and you don't make it, you don't make it?
That's a great question. And the truth is, sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. We're not setting all policies across the board for golf courses. We give them the tools to make the decisions that work for their constituents. So let's say there's a golfer that books, it's a fat finger, they book and they need to make a change right away. We work with that partner. We actually provide a full customer support for that golf course. So when there's something like that comes through, whether it's a mistake, a fat finger, or they simply want to make a change, it depends on the standard operating procedure set by the course or the situation. So they might be able to change it, but ultimately what Golf District was built by is for them to be able to put that back on the market. Maybe they want to book 10 times in advance for the whole season, and the ones they can't make, they can sell.
I mean, it's just a fascinating concept. Yes. To do that, where you make it available for the course to be as, let's say, strict or as non-strict as they want to be. So that's really a good thing. It's up to the course and their policies to decide, and your technology will support either end of that continuum. That's a really good thing. So I got to ask, does this increase the cost of a round for a player like me? Is it now going to cost $72 instead of $70 for a round, let's say, because a course is using this system?
Depends. It really depends, but ultimately it just depends on who you are. And what I mean by that is every public course has a lot of different segments of the customer, whether it's public, resident, a member. Mm-hmm. You know, we know there's 100 snowflakes in the golf industry.
Right.
So it really depends. If you're booking through Golf District's booking engine controlled by the course on their website, it's up to the course to price accordingly. So, you know, think about the industry as what we're doing as the primary and the secondary market. They're going to price the inventory at full rack rate on their website through their booking, Golf District booking engine, at whatever price they want. That rack rate for that privilege to be able to book in advance, 60 days, 120 days advance, it could be higher, it could be lower, it could be status quo. We don't make those decisions. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think you're going to see the prices drift up in the industry as a whole over the, you know, in perpetuity as we see it in the next 50, over the next 50 years. But ultimately, these are the forces of supply and demand, and like any business, you know, they're going to want to continue to protect the people like residents and make sure that that they get their existing booking channel stay the same. But through the public, if there's only 100 times and there's 400 people that want it, you know, the course is obviously going to say, you know, maybe we can get another 15% ADR in this.
Right.
What we're actually seeing through Golf District is courses are making between 20 to 40% higher on an ADR rate. And that's data we have not shared to anyone in the entire golf industry publicly. So to answer your question, a long story short, ultimately, yes, the golf courses are getting 20 to 40% ADR increases from their overall rate, which is significant, obviously, if you're a course owner and business owner.
Well, that is significant. And I was just going to say, let's move past the Shark Tank part of this and just brag a little bit. Who's using the system and how's it going for them?
Yeah, so, I mean, all of our courses are reporting back really positive data, really positive metrics. For one, their no-shows are at zero.
That's huge.
We have zero no-shows, which we know it's a billion-dollar problem in the golf industry.
Yeah.
So that's one of the big, you know, things we set out is how do you run an extremely efficient market? And that was a huge win for us to be able to prove out. The ADR increase is obviously huge, and their utilization has stayed pretty much flat or the same, pretty much flat for all of our courses or above. I mean, it really just depends on the micro environment. But those are the main metrics that are really increasing directly from the tee time inventory. What we're seeing ancillary on the data end is by having a prepaid policy, the customer is now made a purchase that is out of sight, out of mind. When they show up, they're spending more on the course. So even though this is an economy focused on tee times, there are some unintended consequences that are positive where spending is being reported up to 20% higher because they show up already spent their dollars. So you have increased access. The course has made their money and locked in their revenue. They're not playing these 7-day cycles of, you know, are we going to book out next week? What's going on? Are we, you know, have we answered the phones? Have we taken care of these customers? They're locking in their revenue, you know, months in advance. And then, you know, their spending on F&B and et cetera goes up as well. So we're seeing exactly what we thought. There are really no surprises in the data, but it's really cool to see, obviously, a year in, the impact we've been able to make for public golf.
Well, I know some of the, I mean, it's amazing news. And I know some of this may be confidential to you, but are there any courses that you'd like to mention as leaders who've been out there? You've only been open for a year, for business for a year, but are there a couple of courses you'd like to mention that are using the service?
Everything's public in terms of obviously where we are. So I don't think anything is confidential to share. Mm-hmm. But obviously we're really thankful for anyone who's building in golf, and getting that first course is pretty hard, right? Because you're unproven, especially the way that the golf industry is, where you don't have everyone who wants to be the tip of the spear and the first movers, and then you've got a spectrum of followers as within the golf industry, whether it's the NGCOA or management companies. We are working with a number of multi-course operators in the U.S. We went live piloting with one of the Kemper Sports courses, Black Gold in Yorba Linda. I have to give a big shout out to Arrowwood Golf Course in Oceanside, California. They were the first golf course we went live with a year ago.
Wow.
And that's a big deal. We really are thankful because, you know, that first customer is a big ask. We are really heavy in Southern California, and that's where a lot of our team is. I have family in California. Our first multi-course operator that we partnered with was JC Resorts. They've got, I'm going to mess this up, but they've got at least 18 golf courses that they manage, and I think they own a couple. So we've already started to scale through the JC Resorts portfolio. But it is a process, Michael, as you know. Multi-course operators are big organizations that have a lot of leaders within the organizations, i.e. general managers. So, you know, it's not a straight path. Even when you find some success, it's still a process, and, you know, it takes time for the data to come in and to be able to prove out the results so you can be entrusted to support and serve additional golf courses.
Yeah, I do get it. And more courses are relying and comfortable with relying on the numbers. And it sounds like just by the numbers, you've got something really special going here. What's next for you? Obviously, growth and getting to more courses and getting the message out, getting more properties in your client base is the word of the day, yeah?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I wouldn't really call us in the last year in scale mode. It was really, you know, you go to market, you get your proof of concept, you know, you have these theses, and you really don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, whether or not there's not even talking about bugs in the technology, but just your underlying assumptions on how you built these things. So that first year was really about, you know, operating one course, figuring out the snowflake they are, how do you solve their problems and make them happy. Then you get the next one, and, you know, you get to a certain point in that first year, at least where we are, where we know how to we built something that we know that works on all profile types, whether municipalities, destinations. We've got some really exciting, huge branded partners that are going to be going live to the market here this year. Our real focus on this first stage of growth is focusing, obviously, on public golf. You know, we really like the NGCOA. We really like, and that's not to single out them, but obviously they've got a lot of, it's the NGCOA. This is the organization where all the, you know, the policy defense and the coalitions in golf have evolved over the last few decades. So we've been fortunate enough to be a sponsor of the NGCOA. You know, we'd like to expand our affiliation throughout the U.S. with other NGCOA affiliates. We're obviously live with, as I mentioned, with a few multi-course operators. We have We'd like to get all the multi-course operators on board. We'd like to get the whole market that is within our profile. 59% of all public golf courses are at or near capacity, according to the NGF.
Hmm.
I think they've quoted that to 63% in some or so. I've seen a couple data points. So that's our market. That's the golf course that we're focused on today, where this technology excels at. You know, we've got a lot of exciting products here within our roadmap of expanding on this ecosystem of what we're doing. So I can't give you too much, but that's the direction we're going in terms of this product. At this point, I wouldn't really call there a huge need within the private market because of just how different it is,
sure,
the experience of booking tee times.
Sure. Well, you definitely have a long and promising road ahead of you. And we hope to be with you every step of the way. For those who are in the business now and want to get in touch with you to see a little bit more about what you do, where can they get in touch with you?
You can email me at josh@golfdistrict.com. You could contact us on our website. We'd absolutely, you know, now that we are past this first year and starting to scale, we're open to bringing in as many courses that reach out to us. It only takes us about 2 days to onboard a course. Hmm. So there's some operational latency sometimes where maybe it's peak season and they don't want to focus. So, you know, that onboarding can stretch, but technologically, you know, we already exist. We use the same tee sheet they did yesterday, and we love to hear from you, and we look forward to serving the U.S. So thank you again, Michael, for your time, and love to stay close. I know you're not too far from me in the Washington, D.C. area, so love to get lunch sometime.
Well, you had me at hello, basically. So, yeah, we can definitely do that, and we can definitely make that at one of your clients. We can go at some golf course and maybe work things out. But it's a truly exciting opportunity that you have going. And we, of course, wish you all the best and can't wait to have you back on to talk about some more of the success that you've had with the business, with the technology, all of it.
We love that.
Beautiful. Love Josh, that. Thank you so much for the time. And we will talk to you again soon. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much, Michael. And I look forward to hearing from all you golf general managers and owners soon. So thank you.
You got it. That's Josh Siegel, the CEO of Golf District. You know, when we talk about the industry, when we talk about the game, we always talk about the things that will help more people get into the game more easily. And this is one of those things. Being able to schedule time on golf courses is getting more and more difficult, especially on the courses that we want to play. Most of us, the public courses, those courses that are really available to us. And having Josh and Golf District get into this business, making that easier for the golfer and easier for the business, easier for the guys who supply the tee times, that's huge. You cannot imagine how huge that is. So again, we wish him all the best, and I'm sure we'll see him back on the show sometime soon. And we'll be right back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. As we say in the business, that's it and that's all for this edition of the 19th hole. I want to thank our very special guest first, Allison Metcalf. She's become not only a great colleague, but a great friend, promoting the very best of what there is to do. And there is so much to do in Ireland, both from the golf side and from anything else that you want to do. It's all available for you there in Ireland. They have literally hundreds of flights, direct flights from the United States, from I believe 21 different destinations in the United States. It's easier than ever to get there. It's better than ever when you get there. And you're really doing yourself a disservice if you don't go play golf in Ireland. It is without compare, really. Go do that. And thank you, Allison, for joining us and telling people about what is there and how to get there. Also, thank you to Josh Siegel. Golf District is going to be big. It's one of those things that is going to be very, very large and very, very important in the business. And very, very few people who pick up a club will know about it, but you'll be affected by it. So thank you, Josh, for bringing us up to date on the technology and what's coming in golf. You can find this podcast and any other podcast that I happen to be involved with on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Music, Apple iTunes, and you can find us any other platforms where magnificent golf podcasts are found. We want to thank you, of course, for listening to the show. You are the reason I do this. People come up to me and tell me when I have a brief lapse in the show, or there's some gaps where we don't come into the show, and there's for good reasons. But people always come up, hey, when are we going to have the next one? When are we going to have the next one? And nothing, the only thing that makes me feel better than somebody telling me that we did a good show is somebody telling me when are we going to hear the next one. So thank you so much for your continued support. And I will always do my very best to give you my very best and give you the very best in golf. Thank you for being a part of it. We'll see you very, very soon with another episode of the 19th Hole. Until then, go out, hit some golf balls, and whether they're on this side of the Atlantic or the other side, please do your very best to hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th Hole.